Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. And we'd like to wish a warm welcome to our new listeners on KGUA on the Mendocino Coast. More than 114 million people have little or no access to dental care. Tooth decay remains the most prevalent chronic health problem in the country. While one-third of white children go without dental care, close to one-half of Black and Latino children go without. 49 million people live in a dental professional shortage area. And even for those who do have benefits under public programs like Medicaid, it can be incredibly difficult to find a provider. In her new book, Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America, today's guest, journalist Mary Otto, explores the state of oral health in the United States and reveals what our teeth say about the isolated dental industry, the notion of beauty, privilege, and class, and the failure of politicians to truly address this issue. Mary Otto is an award-winning journalist and the oral health topic leader for the Association of Healthcare Journalists. She began writing about oral health at the Washington Post, where she worked for 8 years covering social issues. Her new book is called Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. And Mary Otto joins us from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Oh, Rose, great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us, and thank you for writing this book. It is such an important read. We have done so many shows about health care and the Republican attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act. We've been talking about major cuts to Medicaid. I mean, this is getting national attention on a regular basis, but we don't hear much about oral health or dental insurance. Why isn't dental part of the health care debate?
Well, dental care has been occupied a separate system from the rest of our healthcare system for generations now. And in my reporting for the book, I found out it dates back to 1840 and the founding of the world's first dental college in Baltimore. And it's a kind of interesting creation story of our dental system here in this country. In those days, dentists were self-trained. It was considered a kind of trade, and you learned the basic skills of mostly extracting teeth and sometimes repairing teeth from a more experienced practitioner, usually. And when you felt like you knew enough, you just kind of got on your horse and started riding from town to town, and you set up a little temporary dental office in a hotel or a tavern, and you mostly pulled people's teeth. But these two gentlemen, Chapin Harris and Horace Hayden, decided that dentistry was worthy of a higher, you know, higher consideration. Science was kind of growing in those days, and understanding of different kinds of diseases, and they thought oral health was important, and they approached the physicians at what was a very prestigious dental college in medical college in Baltimore and asked them if they would consider adding a dental course to the medical studies there. And the physicians, as the story goes, said that the subject of dentistry was of no interest. So these two gentlemen, Horace Hayden and Chapin Harris, set up their own dental college and a whole separate dental educational system, dental clinic system, dental payment system grew up around that. And that event is called the historic rebuff. And it still shapes, you know, our systems today, and the fact that our medical records and dental records are kept separately. They're not compatible with each other. We pay for our dental care separately. Mm. And we tend to think about our oral health separately from the rest of our health, even though, you know, oral health is part, you know, it's part and parcel of our overall health.
It's just very interesting that with this conversation about health care, we just don't include dental insurance or dental care in that conversation. Mm-hmm. And you write about Remote Area Medical. They're an incredible all-volunteer mm-hmm. clinic that travels across the country providing dental and vision. They were just in Oklahoma over the weekend. I mean, it's shocking to watch people standing in line overnight to get basic care. But when they were in Oakland, I went to the clinic and interviewed a few dentists, and they said, you know, in the beginning of the ACA debate, a bunch of dentists brought a package to the White House and told the Obama administration, here's our plan. This is how we think dental should be included in the ACA. And they were told flat out that dental's off the table.
Well, I wonder, there's kind of a history of organized dentistry resisting efforts to incorporate dental care into the larger healthcare system. And in fact, the American Dental Association raised objections to the Affordable Care Act related to the requirement of providers to participate. They would oppose any federal effort to dictate fees or to lead to a government-run healthcare system. And that is typical of organized dentistry's position toward care over the years, in the years leading up to the establishment of Medicare. Organized dentistry, the editors of the American Dental Association's journal, the Journal of the American Dental Association, wrote that state dentistry is wrong in principle and would be disastrous in practice. They called it a monster of exploitation of the dental profession. You know, organized dentistry represents the interests of private practice providers, which are the majority of providers in this country. And like organized medicine, there's been a sort of wall, you know, between the objectives of private practitioners and the efforts to expand care to reach everyone. And as you pointed out, about a third of Americans face significant barriers getting dental care.
We'll talk about lobbying later in the show, because CalMatters has a piece about the California Dental Association spending $664,000 lobbying in California last year. They've poured $12 million into politicians' coffers over the last 5 years here in California. But I want to talk about the numbers in your book, because they're so shocking. As you write, more than 114 million Americans lack private or public dental benefits. 35 million children are entitled to dental care under Medicaid, but half go without care. Medicare covers 55 million older people and poor people, but does not offer routine care. I think one of the things that got me the most, Mary, is reading that more than one out of three low-income adults avoids smiling. This is according to a Harris poll conducted on behalf of the American Dental Association back in 2015. Mm-hmm. One out of three low-income adults do not smile because of what's happening in their mouths.
Yeah, there's a lot of shame around poor oral health. And we tend to, you know, this is the country that made the Hollywood smile kind of a status symbol around the world. It dates back to Depression-era Hollywood, actually, when motion pictures, you know, came along and became very popular on the talkies. The actors started opening their mouths, and people looked up at the screen, and not all of their teeth were what we would consider a Hollywood smile today. And this Depression-era dentist named Charles Pincus invented these little Hollywood veneers, he called them. They were snap-on appliances that stars like Shirley Temple wore, so they looked like they had perfect teeth when they faced the camera. And as a country, we became obsessed with these beautiful smiles. The cosmetic dental boom really took off in the 1980s with the invention of all these new kinds of veneers and products that could make these smiles more readily available, and these elective procedures continue to drive a large part of the dental industry in this country. People who fall short of that appearance are ashamed, and, you know, for so many millions of Americans for whom routine dental care is out of reach, tooth loss is a reality. You know, toothaches are a daily fact of life. And, you know, when you stand in those lines, with those people who are waiting overnight for a free visit, which usually results in, you know, the extraction of teeth, you realize there's so many people in this situation. It holds them back from finding jobs. You know, it can condemn them or lock them into a cycle of poverty. You know, when you can't get a service job, you know, is usually a sort of a stepping stone, you know, out of poverty because you have missing teeth. It's a very difficult thing.
A lot of the people who go to these RAM clinics across the country, and this was started in the Amazon rainforest by Stan Brock, who wanted to ensure that people living in remote areas had access to medical care. And then he got a call from someone in Tennessee who said, can you bring these dental tents and these vision tents to the United States? And he was shocked. He's a Brit. And he said, in the United States, the wealthiest country on earth, why is this needed there? Well, ever since, he's been busy. He said he can drop a pin on a map in the United States and his services are needed. People stand in line overnight, and usually RAM goes on Facebook and says, we pulled 100 teeth last night. I mean, so many people who go to these clinics are in such dire straits that they have no choice but to have their teeth completely pulled.
Yeah, they pull thousands of teeth at some of these weekend events. And then, you know, people face the difficulty of you know, getting dentures or getting replacements. That can be very, very difficult. I mean, Medicaid, which covers over 70 million poor children and adults in this country, entitles children to dental benefits. But fewer than half get the routine care. Fewer than half of dentists participate in Medicaid. And Medicaid does not entitle poor adults to dental care. It's left up to the states whether or not they provide benefits or how many benefits they provide. And it can be very, very hard for adults to get dental care when they're covered by Medicaid. It's an ongoing problem. Medicare, which covers over 50 million elderly and disabled adults, has never included routine dental benefits in its coverage. So there are tens of millions of elderly adults in America who are dentally uninsured.
Mary, you began writing your book in 2007 at the heart of the silent epidemic of oral disease, and you were at the bedside of Diamante Driver, a 12-year-old in Maryland who was dying of complications from an untreated dental infection. When did you first hear about Diamante Driver's story?
Well, I heard about Diamante when I was working at the Washington Post. A lawyer named Lori Norris, who was working for a nonprofit legal program in the area, who I'd talked with about other cases over the years, was trying to help his mother find care for Diamante's younger brother. These were Medicaid children. Their mother was a working mom, just trying to find dental care for her children. They were having a terrible problem a participating dentist in the driver's community. And while they were looking for care for Diamante's younger brother, Diamante came home from school one day with a headache, and he felt bad. And his grandmother took him to a local community hospital where he was diagnosed with an abscess tooth and a sinus infection and sent home with some medicine. But he got worse. His mother took him to another hospital the following couple days later, and he had a spinal tap, and he was diagnosed with meningitis, and he was rushed to a big hospital in Washington, Children's Hospital, where he ended up getting two brain surgeries. This infected tooth was extracted, and he was hospitalized for about 6 weeks, but it wasn't enough to save him. You know, doctors told his mother that bacteria from that infected tooth had spread to his brain, and this infection took his life ultimately. The care cost $250,000, but, you know, routine dental attention throughout his childhood might have saved him. You know, just the kind of fluoride treatments and sealants and things that children with, you know, regular coverage and what is called a dental home take for granted was something that Diamante never received. So his case really captured the imagination, you know.
And as you write in your book, Mary, and a couple of the articles that I've read, Diamante should not have died. I mean, this was preventable. And this, I'm guessing, doesn't happen in other wealthy countries. What happened after the death of Diamante Driver? The Washington Post wrote a couple of articles about how, obviously, it made politicians in Maryland look really bad, and they had to get together with a number of community members, the dental community, to make sure that this didn't happen again.
Yeah, I followed all the reforms that went on afterwards. This was 2007. In interesting ways, there was somewhat of a correlation with the times we're going through right now. On a federal level, members of Maryland's congressional delegation kind of would not let this case fall by the wayside. They had hearings, you know, recalling federal officials. This was when President George W. Bush was in the White House, to task about the lack of support they were giving for states for their Medicaid programs, the lack of oversight dental care was getting, you know, for this federal program. And on a state level, the Medicaid system reformed quite dramatically. Governor Martin O'Malley had a special committee appointed, and they went through the system step by step, kind of called for reforms, and the state legislature, you know, agreed to higher reimbursement rates for dentists, the sort of streamlining of the paperwork, a single administrative organization to kind of oversee the care that you're receiving and hold insurance companies accountable. And the instatement of dental hygienists, who had been asking to go out to schools and work outside of dental offices in public health settings before Diamante died, they were given the ability to go out to schools and nursing homes and other places and just get some basic preventive care to people who needed it.
Today we are speaking with Mary Otto about her new book, Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Mary is a veteran health journalist, and she has written a very important book about dental care. For some reason, dental care just doesn't get much attention when we talk about health care in this country, especially as we're having this debate about the future of health care in the United States. More than 114 million Americans do not have access to health care. 35 million poor children are entitled under federal law to dental benefits under Medicaid, but more than half go without care. And a lot of dentists, I just went to the dentist on Friday and asked about this issue, and my dentist said that even people who have insurance have to pay very high costs, and it's better off if they tell the dentist they don't have the insurance, and then you can get a small discount. This is just the reality that we're facing. My teeth cleaning was $230, and that was half off. So if you have any dental stories you'd like to share, do you have dental insurance? If you are a dentist, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. Mary, what did other states learn from what happened in Maryland?
Well, Maryland likes to say it went from worst to first, you know, in terms of getting more dental care to children. And it has made great strides since Diamante died. You know, better system, more streamlined, more dentists participating. Still, it's not a perfect system by any stretch of the imagination. Actually, Maryland is one of a handful of states where adults receive no dental care at all under the Medicaid system. So now some of the advocates who helped reform the system for children are back at the legislature saying we've got to help adults now because the situation is dire for them. But other states have followed Maryland's lead in streamlining and making the system, their systems, better. And overall, more care has gotten to children over the past decade. Some of it has to do with just the way the private practice system, it's not the most efficient system for getting care to, especially to needy people and old people and isolated people. I mean, because you have to get yourself to a private practice that will accept you. So the idea of, like I mentioned, the public health hygienist going to schools and getting basic routine care to children in that setting, you know, is something that's catching on. Also, the idea of getting care to seniors in nursing homes and senior centers is being explored, because these are populations, vast numbers of people who really can't get up and take themselves to a dentist or find a participating dentist in some cases. It's interesting.
Right, or stand in line overnight if remote area medical comes to your area. Well, coming up after the break, let's continue talking about dentists. You report, Mary, that fewer than half of the nation's roughly 150,000 working dentists participate in Medicaid, which is supposed to provide poor children with dental, and then two-thirds of licensed dentists do not accept that program. Hospital emergency rooms are swamped with people who have neglected teeth. Today we're speaking with Mary Otto, a veteran health journalist, about her new book, Teeth, the Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call. On the phone, sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or by going to the yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Tomorrow, we will have a discussion about the extension of California's cap and trade program. It's dividing environmentalists. It's a five-year program that requires companies to buy permits to release greenhouse gas emissions. Some say it's a historic victory, but critics from groups like Food and Water Watch say it allows polluters to simply pay a fee to continue poisoning our climate. So what do you think? Is cap and trade a polluter loophole or a step forward? That is on tomorrow's Your Call. Today we are speaking with Mary Otto, veteran health journalist and author of the book Teeth, the Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. 114 million Americans do not have dental care, and that number could grow if the ACA is repealed. In the wealthiest country on earth, toothaches are a chronic reality for a huge number of older people and people of color. If you have a story to share about dental care, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can email feedback@yourcallradio or tweet at Your Call Radio. Let's hear from Vivian in Hayward. Hi, Vivian. Welcome to the show.
My younger brother and I got to go to a dentist for the first time in many years, and after he treated my brother and I, my mom said, okay, well, I'm going to go into his office now to my little younger brother so that he can work on my teeth, and she just looked at me sternly, and the reason that that was odd is my mother had false teeth. And so what she was doing, she was bartering sex. Because she was married, that was when, you know, raping your wife was legal in California. She was married to a rapist who refused to give her money for shoes for us and dental care for us. And so even though she was the opposite of a sleazy woman, she used what she had so that her children could go to the dentist.
Wow. Thank you for calling in, Vivian. Mary, you write about so many children who end up in the emergency room, and sometimes their parents are also struggling with oral care. Can you talk about the lengths that parents are going to try to get their kids basic dental care?
Well, in Diamante's, the case of Diamante Driver, you know, this young boy who ended up dying of the complications from untreated tooth decay, his mother had been unable to find a dentist by herself, but even with the help of a lawyer, you know, who had a staff, you know, at this nonprofit legal clinic, it took them weeks to find care for Diamante's younger brother, and he ultimately didn't get the care he needed until after Diamante had died, when they went to the University of Maryland Dental School for care. And dental schools can be a good source of care. If you have one in your area, they provide at least care on a sliding scale basis in some cases. It can be a good resource for people who are just struggling and have run out of ideas for places to get care. Go ahead.
Well, what did you hear from dentists when you asked them about this? Because as you report, depending on what dental school people go to, like so many people who finish school, they're saddled with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And as you report, it's more lucrative to provide cosmetic surgery, for example, than to treat children on Medicaid.
That's very true. You know, most dentists in America are private practitioners, and they operate as small businessmen and women. You know, they go into business in places that they hope will provide a good return on their investments. And, you know, many of them graduate with, you know, more than $240,000 in educational debt. You know, they have to buy equipment and hire a staff and pay, you know, insurance and rent an office. And so, yeah, there is that issue. Many of them are hard to find in places where there are a lot of needs because they do tend to gravitate to more affluent metropolitan areas. And in some of these places, they're actually competing against each other for business, while, you know, 49 million Americans live in areas where there aren't enough providers, according to federal statistics. So there's this maldistribution problem. And dentists say, you know, we do, you know, that we lose money treating Medicaid patients. You know, the reimbursement rates are low. The paperwork is difficult to complete. I know there's been a big discussion of that in California, and it's true all over the country. There is just such a tension between the private practice system and the need for broader care, you know, across our population.
You report in Teeth that the community of Falls Church, Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C., and one of the richest places in the U.S., has one dentist for every 350 residents. In Dickinson County, Virginia, which is very poor, there's one dentist for 15,486. So one dentist for 350 residents right outside of D.C., and one dentist for 15,000 residents in Virginia.
Yeah, that was a county in the mountains, Dickinson County, close to the free dental clinic, the remote area medical clinic I featured in the book, you know, with, you know, all these old retired coal miners and factory workers and housewives and homemakers waiting, you know, sleeping in their cars, waiting to get teeth extracted. And people coming from very far away sometimes. You know, when they heard there was a free clinic, I met this young woman who, she and her family, they were housekeepers down in Florida, and she was in so much pain, they drove all night and, you know, all day to get to this clinic. And you know, she had some teeth that were troubling her extracted or repaired. It's just, you don't forget the kind of stories people tell you in these places.
Well, thank you for calling in, Vivian. Let's go next to Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Well, I just wanted to point out that our single payer bill, which is California bill, which is stalled in the assembly right now, includes dental care. And it includes vision and long-term care and many other things. Also, H.R. 676, which has been stalled in the federal House, is also includes dental care. And we'll see what Bernie introduces. We're expecting him to introduce something in September.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that, Judy. We did a show about single payer in California a couple weeks ago, and you can find it at yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Joan in San Francisco. Hi, Joan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. My mom is over 65, and like most people, she still works full time and probably will see. She's 150. But I was amazed. What is it for people over 65? Medicare, that it didn't offer dental. I was just absolutely amazed as the stories you've told. It's completely tied into your full health. So I suppose my question is, I'm assuming the reason not is from the story your guest told, that when it was developed, teeth weren't considered an important health issue. But I wonder why that's kind of never been introduced or tried to change. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Mary?
Well, over the years, people have pointed this out in a very dramatic way. In the year 2000, then Surgeon General David Satcher issued the first ever comprehensive look at America's oral health. And this report was called Oral Health in America. And he called attention to, you mentioned, the silent epidemic of oral disease that's afflicting, you know, millions of Americans. And he called for a system that would meet the oral health needs of all Americans and integrate oral health effectively into overall health. And he made suggestions that, you know, were important ones about integrating the two systems, expanding coverage and access to care, expanding the oral health workforce so that more, just there'd be more hands on deck to reach people. And, you know, it was a landmark report, and it did arouse a lot of conversation. Many groups, oral health advocacy groups, children's groups, continue to talk about this report. And, you know, in some ways, it's remained a touchstone and an important point of conversation. And I'm sure that it has contributed to the idea of, you know, the last caller mentioned about new health care programs should include oral health services as well as vision services and other kinds of services, because we're talking about overall health here.
And as Joan said, I'm sure a lot of people do not know that most people who have dental benefits lose them when they retire. Medicare, which covers about 55 million older people and people with disabilities, does not cover routine dental services. We have an email from a listener who says it's related to Joan. One thing her parents complain about is that they've retired and they don't have dental insurance. The dentist is saying that my dad needs $14,000 of work and it all has to be paid out of pocket. So now he's not getting it done, and his friends are telling him he should go to Mexico or India to get it done. Are you hearing this from other people, Mary, that they're going to other countries to get their teeth worked on, to get some of this, for example, $14,000 worth of work done?
Yes, you know, their dental tourism is a big deal now, like other kinds of medical tourism, and people go to Mexico and other countries to get care. You know, the systems there are different, you know, and obviously you need to be very, very careful when you select a provider, you know, and think about all the conditions you have to consider, you know, but there are some people who really swear by dental tourism.
What does it look like in other countries? We have an email from another listener who says in Denmark, each school has at least one dentist on site full time, and children receive dental care free of charge, of course, through grade 10. They get two checkups a year and then interventions as needed. She said, I had a root canal done at the age of 12 free of charge. In addition, children in Denmark are taught how to care for their teeth, including monthly hands-on instruction on brushing and flossing.
You know, this book did look at America's system, but, you know, there are things that we are learning from other countries that are contributing to new approaches. And one of them, as that emailer mentioned, is the idea of oral health care, bringing it to children in schools. I talked to a dental hygienist named Tammy Bird in my reporting, and in a case that she had to take on the South Carolina Board of Dentistry to get the ability to treat children in the schools in South Carolina. And restrictive dental practice acts in some states do prevent the kind of care that the caller described or the emailer described. In Tammy Bird's case in South Carolina, the state legislature passed a law giving dental hygienists the ability to serve children in schools without first being examined by a dentist. But once the legislature went into recess, the dental board got an emergency regulation put into effect to stop the hygienists from going into these schools. And they saw this as kind of taking their patients, although the state legislature passed this law because 250,000 poor Medicaid children weren't getting care in the state, and they were trying to find a way to get more care to these kids. And Tammy Bird had mortgaged her home to invest in the equipment she needed to start this business to get care to these children. She was almost financially ruined during the fight with the dental board. Finally, the Federal Trade Commission took her side, and the agency argued the dental board's anti-competitive actions were driven by self-interest and were hurting the poor children in the state. Mm-hmm. The dental board fought the case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, but the Federal Trade Commission won the case, and Tammy Bird, you know, is providing care to these children today with, teams of dental hygienists that she employs. There are ways that dental practice acts around the country could be expanded to allow more mid-level providers, you know, to get care out to people or to expand access to care. And they're strongly opposed in many cases by organized dentistry, you know, who, because they're representing the interests of private practitioners and their ability to, you know, provide care at the cost, at the price they want to provide it, and to the people they want to provide it. You know, the sort of professional autonomy that's prized by many professions.
And as we mentioned earlier, according to CalMatters, the California Dental Association spent $664,000 lobbying in California in 2015 and spent about $12 million over the last 5 years on California races. On today's Your Call, we are speaking with health journalist Mary Otto about her new book, Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a dental story to share, over 114 million Americans do not have dental insurance, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or tweet at Your Call Radio. Let's go next to Nicola in Oakland. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello. I have, I'm sorry, I am a little bit nervous. I have a statement and a question for the author.
Okay.
First, I would like to ask the question. How does one go about finding a conscientious dentist?
That is a great question. Mary, how do you find a conscientious dentist?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't go into this in the book at all, but personally, I tend to ask people I know and trust, you know, where they get their care. And it's important to talk with them at length about this and how they're treated and how they feel at the office and how it's worked out for them over time.
Does that help, Nicola?
Oh, yes, very much so. And my next, I have a brief statement. I find that I'm a bit nervous. I happen to be 52 years old, and I went to the I have Medi-Cal, Dentical. I'm sorry, I have Dentical, but they told me that they because I have some gum problems, they told me that they will not treat me because I am over 21.
Mary?
From what I understand about Dentical, it's very specific in the procedures that it covers for adult beneficiaries. I don't know the specifics of her case, But I do know that dental benefits were eliminated from DentiCal for a few years, and they've been partially reinstated. And there's been a lot of discussion recently about expanding them further. And I know there's been conversation about additional money from a cigarette tax that may be going to help expand access to care under DentiCal. I know that people close to this issue in California are staying tuned to see how the system may change, you know, with this additional funding and additional attention.
And DentiCal, what is that exactly?
That is the Medicaid dental program in California.
Is it a popular program? I haven't heard much about this. I'm surprised.
Well, it's just the dental benefit under Medicaid.
Okay.
It's just the nickname they call it. I mean, different states have different names for their Medicaid programs, and that's just one of the names that's what it's called in California.
All right. Well, thank you, Nicola. I hope that helps you. We have an email from another listener who says, I'm an upper middle class woman with no dental insurance. Why? Because it's expensive. It covers a couple of cleanings a year, which I can easily pay for. It would not have covered my $5,000 implant. And I'm sure a lot of people have similar sentiments about dental insurance.
Yeah, it covers routine procedures. It's important to look at the things that the plan covers. You know, some plans cover more things than others. But yes, usually, you know, the routine treatments are covered, and then you get a discount, you know, for more involved procedures.
Yes. Speaking from experience, when you call a dentist, be sure to ask if they give you a discount if you do not have dental insurance. Try to work with them if you need some work, because depending on the dentist, they will work with you, but make sure you ask that question. Thank you for that email. Let's go next to Oliver in San Francisco. Hi, Oliver. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I would like to make a couple of comments about, I have used UCSF Dental School and also University of Pacific Dental School. And I want to say, first of all, they're not that cheap. In fact, you can find some clinics that are priced pretty close to them. And also, when I went to the University of Pacific Dental School, they were trying to convince me to have two of my teeth pulled. And I honestly believe is because the dentist student, all the only procedures that they have left that they had to complete before they could get out was that. And I feel that depending on if you're lucky, you can come up with somebody who's very conscientious, both the person who's supervising and the person who is the student dentist who is about to graduate. But that really is a luck of the draw. If they identify with you, if they like you and they identify with you, they have empathy, they have the care that you receive is completely different.
Mm.
And also, I was going to ask your author, who seems to know a lot about this stuff and has done a lot of research, I was wondering, is there any way that there could be a bill put, or at least a suggestion that there could be a bill that if people were willing to go overseas to get their dental work done, could that be tax deductible? At least if you could, because there's a lot of people in the Bay Area who are considered middle income or upper middle income, but because of the cost of living here, I would be that.
Mm.
We're really not. I mean, I don't know if I'm making any sense or not.
Well, Oliver, we spoke earlier about people who travel to other countries to get dental care. Is this something that politicians are talking about, Mary?
You know, it's hard to know what's being discussed in terms of dental care right now in this vast debate over our healthcare system as a whole. And if history's any indication, you know, dental care sometimes gets left out of these big conversations. So it's important, you know, if you're talking to your lawmaker about health care, you know, reforms and other kinds of things, to remember to mention oral health as part of that conversation. But, you know, I don't know if anything about tax deductions for travel is being considered. I'm thinking the conversation is so broad right now.
Right.
People are worried about the ending of the children's health insurance program. Funding runs out in September, and that currently covers about 8 million children of the working poor. So that's a big conversation point right now. Will it get renewed? In what kind of form will it get renewed? Whether, you know, reforms to Medicaid and these hundreds of billions of dollars of cuts that have been discussed, will that impact access to dental care?
Mm.
You know, will it become more tenuous if states receive a block grant fund to run their Medicaid programs? All these are huge issues that are just sort of hanging in the balance right now, and we don't know what will happen. But I know oral health advocates are quite concerned.
Well, thank you for calling in, Oliver. Let's hear next from Cynthia in San Francisco. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for my call. And Rose, once again, you've done it. You've brought a subject to the fore that you never hear talked about elsewhere. Your guest is fantastic.
Thank you.
I do have dental insurance. And it's not covering what I need. I think it's absolutely an outrage that Medicare, when you are eligible as a senior, stops your dental care when you need it the most.
Mm-hmm.
I've had friends who've done dental tourism. The cost is overall cheaper, but they've come home. Something's gone wrong.
Mm.
It's very expensive. So I need $20,000 of dental work, which I am not able to afford even with coverage.
Wow.
My problem is that I am also a breast cancer survivor, which has given me, it leaches the calcium out of my bones.
Mm.
I could not take bone enhancers to prevent that. I now have irreversible osteoporosis in my spine, my neck, my hips, my legs. Totally handicapped me. I could not get dental work because of the cost before I could take bone enhancers for my breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't pay $20,000 to do my dental work here, and as a consequence, I now have severe osteoporosis.
Wow.
Oh, it's just another reminder of how oral and overall health are so interconnected in so many ways, and the especially high bar, you know, for many people that they face, you know, in getting the care they need. Her case, although this doesn't specifically relate, it's an important point to make that many of us, as we grow older, begin to take medicines, very common medicines, hundreds and hundreds of them. One of the side effects is dry mouth. It's such a common issue. And dry mouth can make your teeth far more vulnerable to tooth decay. So it's important, if you have dry mouth or if you're taking a medication that causes it, to talk to your physician or your dentist about addressing this problem, because, you know, a small thing like that can lead to farther, deeper problems.
Cynthia, thank you so much for sharing your story. Mary, do you have any tips for Cynthia? I mean, a $20,000 bill is incredibly high. And at a time when she's dealing with so many other health issues,
yeah.
I mean, going to the dentist, if you need intense work, it's an overwhelming process. I mean, you need a day or two to recover, and
absolutely.
Unfortunately, a lot of people just don't have that time. But do you have any tips or advice for Cynthia?
I mean, this is completely out of my wheelhouse, but I would definitely talk to her provider and see if there's a way she might be able to get the payment spaced out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just work with the people you know, your caregivers, and see if there's a way you can get this care done.
Well, thank you for calling again, Cynthia.
Good
luck with all of that. We have another email from Heather who says, my family is fortunate to have dental coverage through our employers, so technically we have double coverage through Delta Dental. However, we still have to pay out of pocket. I'm curious to know more about the insurance company's policies and how much they're pocketing from the public. The dentist and consumer seem to be suffering because of the insurance companies.
Well, it's part of our larger healthcare debate, isn't it? You know, what is the place of dental insurance in this larger system we have here. And it's something we're continuing to wrestle with, you know, when you hear the discussions about single payer and would it actually be cheaper in the long run? You know, that's something that's kind of unfolding right here and now.
We have time for one last caller. Let's hear from Martha in San Francisco. Hi, Martha. We have just about a minute left.
Well, I'm a dentist. If you have any questions, I just felt like I wasn't sure if a dentist has been on the air yet. And my husband does teach in the mornings at UOP, and he talks to the kids who are racking up about $300,000 in student loan debt. And I'm trying to run a practice, and there's another side to all this. And I'm so glad you touched on dry mouth, by the way, because we used to have our elderly go into, you know, to those years, and many of them didn't have teeth, and we didn't have these problems now with dry mouth, which is basically looking like meth mouth.
Wow.
In 90-year-old patients. So many things. And children, and I can remember the president of the California Dental Association talking about children in Central Valley who, as their teeth were erupting into the mouth, they were decaying, and the kind of sugar that was the problem with sugar. And there's so many things I want to talk about. So if you have a question for me, I'm here.
Well, Martha, we only have about 30 seconds, but what would you like to see change? I mean, my dentist just told me, I wish I could take Medicaid patients, but I can't afford it. And
that's
so, so many kids are suffering. We've had emails from women who say they're middle upper class and they can't afford to get their teeth fixed. What would you like to see change in this system?
Well, if I didn't have this nut to crack every month to pay my rent, to pay my wonderful staff, the overhead. I mean, I could do so much more for patients, but I can barely make that bottom line work every month. And so how do we make it so that dentists can open an office and run it well and do the quality that they were taught in dental school? And these kids are being taught incredible dentistry, that they don't have to see a patient every 15 minutes, the whole system is not working. If we all could share the cost of overhead, perhaps that would help. Mm. If I had a bunch of dentists I could work with and we could all share the brains and the overhead and the computer systems, and we could maybe provide it at a lower cost. Most dentists cannot afford dental care right
well,
now.
Well, Martha, we should do another show about this issue. And thank you for calling in. Mary, final thoughts. Do you think that there will be a chance to integrate dental health into the overall system of the physical health? I mean, we're having so many challenges with that, but do you think we'll get there?
I hope so. And I think just the fact that we're having this conversation today is an important step forward. And the fact that people are talking about oral health as part of overall health, you know, our political and biological understanding of dental care is and oral health has evolved. And I think maybe we are looking at change in the future.
Let's hope. Mary Otto is a veteran health journalist and author of the book Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Mary, thank you for joining us.
Oh, Rose, I am so grateful to be with you.
Thank you, and thanks for your work. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about the extension of California's cap and trade program, which requires companies to buy permits to release greenhouse gas emissions. Some groups say it's a victory. Others, like Food and Water Watch, say it allows polluters to simply pay a fee to continue poisoning our climate. What do you think? Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. If you'd like to listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes. If you have a show or guest idea or would like to drop us a line, email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on produced today's show. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us. It's Your Call.